Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to the first Bugle of the rest of humanity. Yesterday was the 31st of December in the year 1BW. Today is the 1st of January in the year of our happy couple 1. All famines, droughts, wars, floods and epidemics have been suspended for the day, but not the Bugle. We're here as the official podcast of the Royal Wedding with issue 151 of the world's greatest and only audio newspaper for a visual world. I'm Andy Zaltzman in London, just a few short miles away from where, as we speak, Prince Harry is giving the best man speech. If I just check with our live relay, yes, he's currently telling the assembled guests all about that time that his brother dressed up in a and his into a whilst five local women wearing nothing but started ing and each other with, and the prince enthusiastically with a massive grin on his head. Why are you bleeping out a story about Prince William visiting an African village to inspect a new school and being treated to a display of traditional local dancing? I hope she can't say anything these days. So I was already married some time before the royal wedding, so no one can accuse me of jumping on the bandwagon. But joining me from New York City, it's a man who wants to be a princess on his special day in a few months' time. It's Mr. For Now, John Oliver!
Hello, Andy! Hello, Buglers! Well, Andy, I don't know about you, but I'm all cried out. I'm all cried out. Are you covered in tears? And now, what kind of tears are they, Andy? Are they tears of pride or tears of shame at having watched the entire ceremony?
Well,
I
do feel I need a bit of spiritual fumigation. I watched the whole thing, John, doing live updates on the Bugle Twitter feed, trying to inject a bit of balance into the coverage. And I need full spiritual fumigation. This is Bugle 151, of course, the negotiations between my wife and me before we got married over the number of wives I would be allowed to have. One. Also 151, the same number of bugles as possible pranks Prince William failed to pull during the service today, any one of which could have given him a place in prank immortality. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin this week, a witchcraft section. We help you to choose whether to take up embroidery, knitting, origami, or making imitation firearms. And once you've chosen witchcraft to learn, we advise you what type of boat to do it on. And once you've chosen witchcraft to do your craft on, we tell you which product by a leading American food conglomerate to eat whilst doing so, and then teach you how to turn a frog into a banjo, how to put a spell on someone to make you give them a seat on a train, and how to make a man's testicle sound like two cymbals crashing together when he walks. Has anyone else had that one? Just me? Man, was green-faced Wendy a bad girlfriend. I knew a chick her age shouldn't have so many cauldrons, but hey, she was hot and she knew what to do with a broomstick.
Top story this week. Here comes the bride. There goes the bride. Now let's all go kill Prince Charles and the Queen so she can take her rightful place on the throne. Just kidding. I'll give it 6 years. Well, we did it, Andy. We did it. And when I say we, I mean England. And when I say England, I mean Prince William and the woman once called Kate Middleton, and who is now called, if I'm not mistaken, Kate Prince William. I'm pretty sure that's right. Pretty sure.
But the palace have insisted that from now on she will be officially referred to as Princess K-Dog. Because she's both traditional and modern, and I think that gets that across.
Now, I might sound a little tired, Andy, but that's only because the wedding was on here at 6 a.m, yeah. And I decided it was safest just not to sleep last night. Going to bed was just too big a risk. What if I'd slept through my alarm? It's just too horrible to even think about.
Did you camp on the streets like everyone in London's been doing?
I had to enter into the spirit of things. Now, when people ask, where were you during the royal wedding? I didn't want to have to say, what, fast asleep, dreaming about being shot by a talking seal holding a paintball gun?
No. Oh, has that one come back, John, has it?
No, it's back. God, I thought I'd lost that one forever, but no, it's back, and right. It's back strong.
That dates back to your first solo Edinburgh show, doesn't it?
Instead now, I can say I was strung out on coffee in a cold sweat jittering in front of the television. And what a ceremony it was, Andy. There were some surprises, certainly. Mainly what didn't happen, rather than what did. I'd put quite a bit of money on the Queen wearing a light blue hat, but, you know, instead she wore a yellow one.
Yeah, she dressed like a banana. That was bold. I don't know what she meant by that. I mean, she's even, because she's quite old now, she's slightly sort of hunched over, so she really did look more like a banana than the Queen should look.
I'd also put a great deal of money on the ground of the Abbey opening up after the vows to reveal a zombie Princess Diana crawling out of the fires of hell trying to drag Kate Middleton back down with her. But that didn't happen either.
What odds did you get on that? 2-1?
It was 9-4. But I really thought it was going to happen. Luckily, the Royal Flypass went off perfectly without a hitch. There must have been a slight concern that the pilots might momentarily forget where they were, and rather than fly past Westminster Abbey in formation, instead they might launch a series of targeted Stinger missiles at it instead.
Could they not have used drones? I mean, surely this is what drones are for these days. Use them for all high-risk missions like that.
Now, also, noticeably, Kate took the obey part out of the vow, and regarding the vows, I also thought that she could take out the for poorer bit of the for richer for poorer part. I don't think they'll be needing that.
Or at least just said afterwards, yeah, but realistically, just for richer.
So, as you say, the guests are currently at the wedding reception at Buckingham Palace right now, where they are reportedly eating royal hot dogs, which is, of course, corgis in a hot dog bun smeared with relish and mustard. If you think that's disgusting, ask yourself this. Is it any more disgusting, realistically, than a regular hot dog? Also, don't act surprised. Why do you think the Queen has so many corgis? She's been farming them for meat. For meat, Andy.
For meat and handbags. So it was unquestionably not just the wedding of the millennium, John, but the wedding of the post-Paleolithic era, I'd say. And as we speak now, I believe the father of the bride is speaking, and Princess K-Dog is shifting uneasily on her newly royal buttocks as her father starts banging on nervously about what happened to Anne Boleyn and telling her to be a very good princess just to be on the safe side. And Prince Harry, of course, has rattled off some crude jokes that he downloaded this morning off the internet, and made some suggestive remarks about the Maid of Honour, who, if I'm not very much mistaken, was none other than the Italian politician and porn star, La Cicciolina. Cicciolina. Controversial choice. But her and Kate used to play in the same roller hockey team. Anyway, I digress. But, yes, it's... and, of course, you know, not only is the ceremonial inaugural royal hump just hours, perhaps even minutes away, if they can sneak out the back of the marquee for 5 minutes whilst the band is setting up. But the first dance is must be getting imminent now, John.
True.
As revealed exclusively on the Hello Buglers Twitter feed, that first dance is going to be to the Velvet Underground's Heroine. Very much what Kate and William refer to as their song. And Lou Reed's been involved in the choreography. Apparently it's going to be pretty graphic, but moving.
Is it going to be both of them slumped down in the middle of the dance floor motionless?
Well, I don't want to give away any secrets, John. I don't want to spoil the occasion.
In terms of the guest list at the wedding, there was some late controversy when it emerged that the Syrian ambassador had been invited to the wedding, which does look bad when you consider what Syria is doing to the Syrian people at the moment. As a nation, it's basically self-harming like a depressed teenage goth. All this provoked something of a diplomatic snafu, as his invitation was revoked after government officials said it was inappropriate for him to attend. And that's for pretty understandable reasons. I think the wedding invitation clearly states that it's formal dress, and that any guests attending cannot have been implicated in opening fire on crowds of their own unarmed citizens. And you really have to make a choice whether you want to go or not. Do you want to go to the wedding, or do you want to shoot your own people? And Syria made their choice, I guess, under the reasoning that the royal wedding is really just for one day, whereas you can shoot your own people all year.
That's why I didn't invite Robert Mugabe to my wedding. Just on those self-same grounds. Otherwise, he'd have been there. And it's a shame, because I think he'd have got us quite a good present.
The Syrian ambassador went on to say that things are settling down in Syria now, but he refused to be drawn on how many people have been killed in the recent violence there. Again, was that because he didn't know, Andy? Or because he's lost count? The news of his disinviting was almost unanimously welcomed, and even the shadow Foreign Secretary Douglas Alexander said, "William Hague took the right decision this morning to withdraw the invitation to the Syrian ambassador. It's crucial at this stage that we send a clear and unequivocal message to the regime in Damascus." And what a message that seems to be, Andy. It seems to be, if you keep slaughtering innocent people, no wedding buffet and party bag for you.
You can't say anything stronger than that, John.
I don't know how you can put it any harsher. If they don't get the message from that, they either aren't listening or they're dead inside. Strangely, even though the Syrian ambassador was disinvited, the ambassador of Bahrain, which has been under martial law since the middle of March, was apparently due to attend. And Libya's ambassador was also officially invited, but was not expected to turn up. I'm guessing on his RSVP, he said, "Oh, very sorry, but my country's tearing itself apart in a brutal civil war. Otherwise, I'd dearly love to have been there. Please accept the enclosed griddle pan as a token of the Libyan nation's esteem." The Syrian ambassador spoke to the BBC and said he was, I quote, "a little bit embarrassed at having his invitation withdrawn, but he wished the couple the best of luck." Now, is that the same kind of luck that he wishes the Syrian pro-democracy activists? "Oh, I wish you the best of luck with your protests," by which I mean best of luck dodging the bullets that will be firing at you. The very best of luck with that.
Well, they did. There were representatives from North Korea and Iran at the wedding, apparently. So, you know, I guess, you know, just building bridges, John. Building bridges. You know, after all, you know, what is the royal family apart from the best cooperation between Britain and Germany that's ever existed?
You're right, Andy. North Korea is there, and that's got a sting. If you were not invited to the wedding, but you see the ambassador from North Korea there, that has to be a slap in the face. And it does seem a gamble having someone representing Kim Jong-il in the room for when they say, "Does anyone have any objection to this union?" Presumably, Kim Jong-il sent them with orders to shout something absolutely insane out at that point. They are his representatives, after all. I'm sure he said, "Now, at that specific moment, I want you to shout something out loud about how I'm the greatest. Okay, just I'll leave that up to you. But that's the tone I want to strike." It might not be directly answering the question that the Archbishop's just posed, but I really think it's worth pointing out loudly at that moment.
So, not only was the Syrian ambassador invited and representatives from North Korea, but not invited were the two previous prime ministers, Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. Downing Street have denied this had any political angle to it.
Oh, sure.
When you're inviting someone from North Korea and not your predecessor in 10 Downing Street, then you are making an infantile political point. And a St James's Palace spokesman explained this by saying, "This is a private wedding, not a state occasion." For a private wedding, they make quite a song and dance about it. So do check out the updates that I put up on the Bugle Twitter feed at Hello Buglers. And I'll just leave you with this thoughts about the wedding, John. If we'd lost the Second World War, that wedding would have happened in Leipzig.
Oh,
that makes you think, doesn't it?
Well, that really brings it home. Completely unnecessary birth certificate news now. And Andy, the Kenyan president of the United States successfully faked and released his fake American birth certificate this week to the relief of everyone who's asleep in the face of the truth. That is how many internet posts reported the re-release of Barack Obama's Hawaiian certificate of live birth this week. And the issue of whether or not the president, who was definitely born in the United States, was definitely born here or not, even though he definitely was, has been stoked up recently by Donald Trump in his ongoing will-I-won't-I dalliance with running for president himself. So after the birth certificate was released, you might have expected Donald Trump to eat some humble pie. But if you expected that, then you're clearly not familiar with Senior Trump, because he's very much allergic to that particular brand of pie. In fact, moments after the birth certificate was released, Trump landed in New Hampshire and went straight to an impromptu press conference where the first things out of his mouth were, "Today, I'm very proud of myself, because I've accomplished something that no one else has been able to accomplish." Now, to be honest, I think that's how he starts every day. I think he looks into the mirror and repeats that to himself three times before brushing his teeth and ironing his hair.
And well, I think the thing that he manages to accomplish every day is seeing himself in the mirror and not screaming. So, fair play to him. No one else can do that.
He then went on to talk at length about how he'd just turned up in a helicopter. And what a helicopter it was. It was black and red. Andy, the best colour for any helicopter in the late 1980s. And it also had Trump emblazoned on the side of it. He said he was honoured to have played such a big role in hopefully, getting rid of this issue. "Now we can have a look," he said. "We can have a look at it to see if it's real." He's incredible, Andy. His capacity for bullshit would either make him the perfect president or the perfect landfill site. I just can't work out which yet.
Such a fine line, so often. I'm fascinated by this term birtherism, which makes it sound like a branch of philosophy, a school of thought that holds that where conclusive evidence verifiably exists to prove a known fact, That evidence can be disproved if it is repeatedly and groundlessly rubbished through a sufficient number of media outlets. And that basically, I think, is what John Stuart Mill would have ended up saying if he hadn't popped his clogs, John. He was basically heading in that direction.
President Obama himself had alluded to Donald Trump during his quick press conference to release the birth certificate, referring to him as a carnival barker. And to that, I say this. That's future President Carnival Barker to you. Have some f***ing respect.
There was an article about him on the Al Jazeera website in which the journalist described Donald Trump as, quotes, the living embodiment of every degrading aspect of American culture.
He would take that as a compliment.
But, I mean, it does. You know, when you read those words, John, and you think of his impending presidential bid, the living embodiment of every degrading aspect of American culture, he is going to be very hard to beat, John, with that
sure
behind
is.
Him. That is vote-winning stuff.
That should be his campaign slogan. Get it's that worked. Across a bumper sticker.
It's worked before, twice in the last three elections.
Trump now also wants the president to release his college records as well. And, you know, I guess President Obama could do that too, but, you know, where does this end exactly? Do we want his intimate medical records as well? Is that enough transparency? Do we want to insert a microscopic camera into his anus just so we can have a look around and check that he's not harbouring any Muslim extremists up there? Is that too much to ask in the pursuit of national security, Andy? And if Obama refuses to do it, the only question is, what's he hiding up there then? Just let us put a camera up your arse and prove that you have nothing to hide.
I will not accept him as my president, John, until I have seen verifiable footage of his mother and his father humping without using any protection. On the appropriate date in whenever it was. 1960 or whatever.
Trump obviously should also now be subjected to exactly the same level of scrutiny. America should get to see all of Trump's financial records. They should get to see what's underneath his profoundly unsettling hair. My guess is that there's a tattoo of his own face up there. And we should get to see his internet history as well. In fact, that truly is the most telling thing that any of us could demand in the name of transparency from a future leader. True transparency means everyone should have to release their personal internet history. Because I bet that Donald Trump Googles his own name a lot. I bet that's 60% of his searches on the internet. I'd also love to see President Obama's internet history. I think it would be very illustrative to see the internet history of all presidents from now on. If Obama ever placed an online order for ping pong balls, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see if he's ever online commentating on a forum about a Jonas Brothers blogs under a fake name. I'd like to see if he was hacking into his daughter's Facebook account to check what they're up to. I'd like to see if he ever looked up the batting average of Jason Bay against left-handed pitchers and how long he spent looking at that page. I'd like to know if he'd ever seen a video of a skateboarder taking a huge knock shot from a telephone pole and how many times he then rewatched that clip. I think that would tell you more about a president's character than any questions about policy. In fact, Andy, I think one debate per presidential cycle should just involve a moderator pulling out a piece of internet history at random from a candidate and simply saying, explain this. Well, that's a good question. I guess I was intrigued to see whether or not Natalie Portman had ever done a nude scene in a movie. Very well. And your opponent? Explain this. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, that was not a serious inquiry. I just wanted to know, hypothetically, whether they made female SS uniforms in my size.
God, was that, I tell you, was that Nixon and Lyndon Johnson?
Good spot, Andy. Good spot. Karl Rove, the top political advisor to President George Bush and total qualified He has called Trump a joke candidate. But I'll tell you what, Carl. I'll tell you what it's nice to have once in a while. Jokes, Carl. They're fun. Sometimes they're not in great taste, sure. And sometimes they're completely pointless. But they're nice to laugh at occasionally. And the truth is, Trump would clearly make a catastrophic president. But he could yet offer one of the greatest, funniest, most ridiculous presidential runs in American history. And it would be so sad if he denied the world that kind of pure, uncomplicated joy.
So he doesn't have all the classic characteristics of a presidential candidate. He's had his worth estimated at $3 billion, but also has, you know, he's danced the dance with bankruptcy on a number of occasions. He's also appeared in Home Alone 2. Mm-hmm. He apparently failed to vote in New York primary elections for over 20 years, so massive democracy fan. He also owns the Miss Universe franchise and sells his own brand of vodka.
That's right.
So are any of those compatible with being president?
Well, I've got some more facts for you here, Andy. Trump does not shake hands because he has a fear of germs. Now, that is something of a handicap to running for office. Is he also allergic to babies' heads? Because there is nothing looks more elitist than spraying your hands with disinfectant immediately after touching a potential voter. Here's another fact. On April the 7th of this year, Trump filed to trademark the phrase "success by Trump" for use in selling, and I quote, cologne, perfume, fragrances, aftershave lotions, skin moisturiser, shampoo, conditioner, deodorant, soaps for hand, face and body, body powder, bath oil, bath gel, bath salts and bubble bath. I do hope that in anticipation of his presidential run, Andy, he's also trademarked failure by Trump as well. Because if he hasn't, I'm tempted to. And while I'm at it, I might also trademark bankruptcy by Trump too. In case I ever want to make a shower gel. As you mentioned, he already has Trump the fragrance and Trump vodka. And again, let's in the future now make sure that every potential presidential candidate has their own line of fragrances. It just makes sense. You can tell a lot about a candidate from whether they like to use base notes of sandalwood or not.
Indecision by Calvin Coolidge.
I think the most telling thing you can know about Donald Trump as a man comes from this exchange he had a couple of days ago in New Hampshire, which I read about it, in an article. I think it really gets across the kind of human being you're dealing with in a very concise, very compact way. I quote, "Donald Trump spent a few minutes shaking hands at a Portsmouth diner, but spent little time in conversation. Passing by a table of older men, he waved and said, 'Why aren't you at work?'" Already a great manner for people there, Andy. Did he whack them with a stick as well? Or hold a gold handkerchief over his nose as he spoke to them? Anyway, it goes on. "We're retired," answered the group of former workers at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. "Don't touch Medicare, right?" Trump said, moving on without waiting for an answer. Trump 2012, Andy. It would be too fun for him not to do this.
I do think, John, that having watched the royal family this morning and feeling a fairly overwhelming surge of republicanism coming up through my body.
Yeah.
Not so much, you know, I've got nothing against William and Kay Dogger themselves, but it's more the coverage of it. And just, I mean, it does show that there are some things we're not so good at in Britain as a nation anymore, for example, manufacturing or running an economy. But there are some things we are good at, and one of those is polishing small bits of brass. And I think that has shown we are possibly world leaders in that.
Yep.
I guess it wasn't such a great occasion if you're not a fan of highly polished small bits of brass and inherited privilege. But I think what it did show, John, is that when you look at that royal wedding and then you look at Donald Trump, there is only one preferable option to that. I'm not sure there would have been quite the same number of people on the streets to see Donald Trump high-fiving himself in Westminster Abbey. British democracy news now, and well, we've seen how much Britain likes being told where it stands by the royal family. But I think we're also about to see in the coming week how little we care about democracy. There's a referendum on whether to replace our traditional first-past-the-post electoral system with an alternative votes system, which basically is replacing something that is grotesquely unfair with something that is marginally less unfair. And this has pitted the two sides of the coalition government against each other, the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives. And the level of debate on the alternative vote, John, has been about the same level of debates you have with your dog when you are training it to shit outside. Very basic and driven exclusively by self-interest. As a democracy fan, John, you know I love a bit of democracy as much as the next man, but it has been monumentally depressing. It has been sub-infantile jibes, lies and bullshit. And they should leave that kind of shit to us, frankly.
I was just over in England and The British public do have an opportunity, a major opportunity, to fundamentally change the voting system. And it seems from the tone of the debate that they're going to seize that opportunity like a child seizing a piece of overboiled broccoli with suspicion, distaste, and eventually complete refusal to engage with it. The tone is really depressing. I only dipped my toes into its fetid swamp for a few days last week, and already I feel like my soul has come out in a rash. The decision is between staying, as you say, with the first-past-the-post system of voting or switching to the alternative vote, which ranks candidates in order of preference. And correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but the campaign surrounding AV has been scummier than an ill-attended pond.
It's been terrible. The main thrust of the No to AV campaign has been that alternative vote is simply too complicated, that the British public, no longer after decades of underfunding of state education, we no longer have the mental capacity to think of things as number one and number two. We can't be trusted with it, John. Plus, you know, I mean, we have trouble enough as it is just writing X. You know, to have to write more than one number is, I mean, there's no way we can do that, John. In fact, I think what this week has proved is that we should ditch democracy altogether and go back to absolute monarchy. I think we are only happy when someone in a crown is threatening to chop our f***ing heads off.
The lowest point of the No to AV campaign was that when the no voters actually took out a billboard arguing that AV would be more expensive to run. And they did this by showing a soldier in battle dress with the slogan, "He needs bulletproof vests, not an alternative voting system. Say no to spending £250 million on AV. Our country can't afford it." Well, that is 11 different kinds of f***ing nauseating, Andy. Because that soldier does indeed need bulletproof vests. They're right there. I'll give them that. But that is very much the beginning and the end of that particular argument. There is nothing more to say after that. You definitely can't use that soldier's need as emotional blackmail for a completely unrelated discussion. Because if all gloves are going to come off, if we're now just going to use soldiers as props in arguments, then you can basically use that billboard to win any debate. "He needs bulletproof vests, not a new swimming pool for St. Bede School District." "He needs bulletproof vests, not the two of us going to see Scream 4 tonight, dear." "He needs bulletproof vests, not me having to do a double shift on Saturday."
"He needs bulletproof vests, not a dialysis machine for some kid he's never met who probably won't ever amount to anything."
The concern is, as well, that May the 5th, this coming Thursday, is going to see an embarrassingly low turnout in this vote. And if so, it really will be an impressive demonstration of apathy from the British public. The British public may not be bothered to vote for how they're going to vote for people that they will not be bothered to vote for.
As you watch the state of the world, John, and the disenfranchised, oppressed people of the Arab world heroically trying to throw off the yoke of subjugation imposed on them by a mixture of state oppression and international political expedience, and then contrast that with 5 minutes of any discussion of the alternative vote referendum, or David Cameron, for example, in the House of Commons this week, saying, "Calm down, dear," to a female MP from the Labour Party, quoting a sexist jibe from an eye-gougingly annoying car insurance advertising campaign from a few years ago, over and over again, as if to ensure that the message reached his public that, for all his public polish, he still has it in him to behave like a thoroughbred tool. And when you read that the turnout for the referendum in London is predicted to be about around 15%, the thought does arise, frankly, if we swapped systems with these Arab countries, who would be more unhappy, John? I think the British public are absolutely psychologically made for dictatorship. Mm-hmm. I think we like not having to think about these choices, and that's why I think why. The first part of the post will probably stay, because it maximises the chance of you not voting for the winning party. Generally, the governments in general elections win quite a sizeable majority, with around 25% or less of the public votes given a low turnout. And this means that three-quarters of the British public at any time can justifiably whinge about the government. And this is what we want, John. We don't want fair representation. We want the opportunity to complain for 5 years. Your emails now, and this one comes in on the subject of where I listen to the Bugle. And the person writes, Dear guys, seeing as we are on a new kick of odd places to listen to the Bugle, I believe I have a unique one. I'm a British volunteer currently serving in the Israel Defence Forces, and I listen to the Bugle in my downtime on my military base in the Negev Desert, while laying in my tent with my assault rifle across my chest.
Wow.
I can't tell you exactly where in the desert, and I'm prevented by regulations from revealing many details about anything, but I think I'm a pretty strong contender for an award for the most unusual place and conditions in which the Bugle is listened to on a weekly basis.
That is a strong entry.
Yours, name withheld. Or was it Name Withhelder? Anyway, I don't know how to pronounce it. But. So that's pretty good. Because we've had Antarctica and Darfur. I'm pretty sure I saw the Duke of York during the wedding ceremony today, just with his hand up to his ear. He's clearly got a little earpiece in there, just giggling away to last week's Bugle. If you've got anything weirder than lying in the Negev Desert with an assault rifle across your chest, let us know, Buglers. And maybe there should be a prize. I don't know. We can have one of the Charles and Diana mugs that's been given away as the coat of arms prize. But I don't know. Maybe I guess you know, if he's working for the Israel Defense Force, I'll just send it to someone in Palestine. It'll find its way to him.
It'll get to you.
Well, moving on now to the more important stuff, and the Bugle Coat of Arms competition, which we've had a fantastic response to. Some superb Coat of Arms efforts have been sent in, and what I'm going to do is I've set up a web page, thebuglepodcast.com, just so you can access the various feeds to get the Bugles. I'll put up a slideshow on the web page of the best entries that we've had for the Coat of Arms competition. This one came in from Kate Kay, who writes, "Behold, a majestic shield that combines the mighty flags of Britain and the USA, adorned with gold filigrees, and topped not just by the knight's helm, but by the knight's helm as worn by Colonel Gaddafi. Because you know that someday during a ridiculous speech, he's going to break that shit out. On either side, he is framed by the Bugle's patron saints, sport, as symbolised by the football, inappropriate feelings for royalty, as represented by Queen Victoria's giant knickers on a flagpole. Sheer juvenility in the form of a penis-shaped helicopter and Florence Nightingale. And just to top it all off, the most holy, most powerful symbol of all, the bird. Plus, along the bottom, the words in beautiful old-style script, 'In bullshit we trust.'"
Wow.
Superb. Thanks, Kate. That's definitely going to be
absolutely great.
A contender.
There's also an excellent one from Amy Carter, who has a majestic shield featuring a resplendent golden bull on one leg with a steaming dump behind him.
Yeah, the shitting bull seems to have been a common trope.
Yeah, it's very good. With the what is the Latin there, Andy?
What, flux pontulius nostri, is it?
Yeah, one? What does that mean?
Flugging a pontulius was, yeah, I believe, a term that I used for Sharon Stone revealing her innermost sanctity in the film Basic Instinct.
That's correct. I remember now. There's another excellent one here from Lana, who lives in St. Petersburg. Yep. Oh, wow. Yep. Is that the real St. Petersburg?
Yeah, she says, "Don't ask me if I was involved in drawing the massive penis on the bridge. I just can't reveal that kind of information."
Well, Lana has done a fantastic coat of arms as well that is beautifully drawn with Florence Nightingale supporting Andy and I blowing bugles. You see Colonel Gaddafi on one side, Henry VIII with the severed head of one of his wives.
Topical.
all under the motto $99 wine and dine. So very good.
I'll put up as many of these as I can on the website.
And so good.
We'll get some kind of voting system going, yeah, probably by email, I think, and we will declare a winner. And, so the commemorative Charles and Diana mugs, smashed or unsmashed, will be on their way in the post after. We'll declare the winner next week, hopefully. And also, while we're on talking about this, you can still contribute to the Bugle's 2011 charity appeal for my children's obstacle course efforts. We've raised so far £1,400 for the Bliss charity to help premature babies. And if you haven't donated yet, Buglers, and I do know there are 7 billion of you potentially out there, please, and I'm afraid I did not find a way to lower the minimum payment below £2. So you are going to have to group together in groups of 20. Yeah, so do keep your contributions coming in. The page is justgiving.com/hellobuglers. And don't forget, we're trying to raise £600 million. We're currently on 0% of that total at 1,425. Amongst the contributors so far include Bieber Palin 2012, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, good for him.
Who was on the Trump Giuliani 2012 ticket.
Yep.
That'll be a double act I'd pay to see.
What a doozy. Double headliner.
Flo Nightingale's given a fair amount. We've had... Colonel Gaddafi's been very, very generous in a number of guises. Benoit Waffle has also contributed.
Little Benny Waffle.
Hikey Pod Snorkel. That's a good name. Was that something we made up, or was that someone's actual name? So thank you very much to all those who have given very generously. And to those of you who haven't, I will hunt you down and kill you unless you give some money for those babies. Sport now, and the main sporting story this week has been the Olympic ticket sale. The deadline passed this week. John, did you apply for anything?
I did not, Andy.
Right.
I did not. Yeah,
still hoping to qualify.
Geography. Yeah, that's right. I will not ever attend the Olympics unless it's as a competitor.
I applied for, as you can imagine, quite a lot.
Yep.
And there were 20 million ticket applications submitted by almost 2 million people for a total of 6.6 million tickets. And so it does show, once again, that British people, not only do they love sports, but as we've seen with the wedding, they love anything that isn't reality.
Yeah, that's right.
These are boom times. Right. For the Brits from this point of view. There's been a number of complaints about the system, though, John. A lot of people complained that the tickets were too expensive. Some complained they weren't expensive enough. Some said it was too complicated, that it took too much time. But above all, the main complaint was that people who'd applied for tickets might have to pay for them if they got them. Because a lot of people have been assuming they wouldn't get all the tickets, so have applied for loads and are now complaining that they might have to pay for what they've tried to buy. And this is brilliant, John. It's not unreasonable, John. You cannot have one rule for investment banks and another for sports fans. I think they should be let off if it they should be bailed out. The government will have to bail out handball fans if it turns out they've got tickets to every single game in the tournament. That's all for the Bugle this week. Next week, I guess we're just going to have to just learn to cope, John, now.
Yeah, boy.
You know, it's the big come down now, isn't it?
Tough. This is tough.
I mean, it'd be nice if we could all go on honeymoon with them. Because, it feels like we basically own them.
Yeah.
The royal family, that's the point. So.
Well, we could gather at the airport when they come back and make them kiss again.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm properly this time. Tongues and all. Well, maybe a little grope on the arse too. Well, show that they really love each other, John.
It's a love marriage.
Yeah. So, that's it, Buglers. Do keep sending your emails in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Check out thebuglepodcast.com and the @HelloBuglers Twitter feed for all the aftermath of the royal wedding. The wedding of eternity. Goodbye.
Goodbye.